something went on here, something went on there. And
tonight on TNT,
Phil Kessel shows up to Maple Leafs camp 15 pounds overweight, but does it matter?
We break down the problems in the NFL.
And we play a brand new game show sensation that's sweeping the nation, K90s. All coming up right now on TNT.
Let me ask you this right quick, you know what I mean?
Well, hello there, Jonathan.
How's it going, bot?
I'm doing good. It's another fresh week of TNT going on here.
And
how's things?
It's a great, another fresh hockey season. Yesterday, not even day one of training camp. It was just like, I think the medicals, right? And Kessel shows up, creates a thunderstorm of media around the city of Toronto. When, by the way, there's a lot of stuff already going on because folks are saying he shows up 15 pounds overweight. Freudian slip there.
Well, Kessel's kind of, that's kind of his style, isn't it? I think it happened last year. I'm pretty sure it happened like the half season. He was really kind of out of shape when they started up, because I think he assumed they weren't maybe going to play. But he's kind of one of those players that he's kind of all talent and not as much on the workout side of things. That's like the old school classic hockey player.
Well, it is the old school thing, because training camp used to be about showing up to get in shape in time for the season, right?
Yeah.
But I guess it's so competitive now that even, I know from being around Halifax, even Sidney Crosby and Nate McKinnon and these guys who are premier players don't take much of a break in the summer. They're working out on the ice and in the gym all summer long. So
yeah,
can you fault Kessel?
What's that?
Can you fault Kessel for pounding some, poutine?
For crushing sleeves of Pringles every night and playing video games and watching TV? Yeah, I think... He says he skated around 10 times and fished most of the summer and some golfing. So, and I'm assuming some snacking was probably part of the deal. But again, the classic example of that old. I mean, Brett Hall was kind of like that if you think about it. He was just one of those guys who wasn't a big practice guy, but he'd fire 3, 100-mile-an-hour shots at the net just to show you he's still got it,
Well, I guess the question is, there are several questions. First of all, does it matter?
Well, it matters if you're sluggish off the start, and he kind of does that. You shouldn't expect a guy getting that much money, being our star player, to be a month behind everybody. I mean, they're making so much money now, and again, they have so much focus on strength and keeping up stuff. You get Stamkos working with Gary Roberts and his program, and so many different guys are about taking their game up a notch. You have PK Subban talking about how he works on things to get better prepared for next season, and more power to those type of players. And that kind of seems to be the way that their agents also want them to speak. But I think that old, there's nothing wrong with actual talent, but I guess 15 pounds might be a little over the top, similar to David Wells back in the day, with the Jays coming into camp heavy. But it's weird. There's some of those guys. It's like, he might score 5 goals in the first, 10 games too, though,
Well, from what you hear, his speed hasn't suffered.
Yeah.
I guess I just wonder, it could also be argued, I suppose, that last year with the Olympics and everything was an especially grueling year. So maybe there are some benefits to kind of just checking out for a month or 6 weeks and letting your body kind of recharge and then getting up to speed when you get back to camp.
I think so. They have these so many skill tests and the physical tests that they do that I could just see him kind of laughing and eating cookies when those guys are doing the bike tests.
Right.
But he's got to do it, so he just must huff his way through it. I remember playing baseball and having an off season and having to do wind sprints after 3 months of not doing anything, and it's the worst thing in the world. But I can't imagine when you're on an NHL team how hardcore those workouts must be.
Well, especially nowadays. But I guess the real question for me is Kessel's weight, compared to the problems that the Leafs seem to have, is that even in the top 100 things that are going on? It just seems like a real dysfunctional group.
Yeah.
And it seems like the leadership is weird, and none of the players really seems to emerge as the voice of reason.
Well, yeah, there's not a lot of leadership in that locker room right now, and I guess he would be the only leader. So that could be the thing you could say is like, hey, you know, I know there's all kinds of issues with the defense going to be there? Are we still going to take the goals against down? Are we going to fix that? Is everybody else prepared? And all these new players, are they good enough? And then having Phil overweight on the top of that, I guess you could kind of knock that. Like, here we are. How are we looking, you know?
But he and Bozy are homies, right? Do you think Bozy's pounding Joe Louis and Demi Loons?
I don't think so. He doesn't. I don't know. I know that hockey players in general like to eat probably junk food because they're all kids still. That's a thing, right? I remember when I was living with Avery and Brad Norton, those guys would just like, there would be
chips,
every snack you could think of on the table while they're watching TV, you know, like from candy bars to open ice cream to chips, and just like, that's just it. Like, they're used to consuming mass amounts of calories because they're working out so hard.
Right.
So in the summer, that doesn't stop, I'm sure. You know, they're probably sitting there eating half a jar of peanut butter while they're playing Halo.
Kessel's kind of an enigma. Like, I don't really have a sense of who he is as a guy.
No.
Like, you say, yeah, playing video games and eating. Is that who he is? Is that what he does?
Well, I think so. Yeah, I think he's a regular guy. He's a regular American kid, but I think he's just very quiet. He's not very good on the mic. He doesn't usually have things to say. He looks very stressed when people ask him questions. He looks like he gets kind of introverted in a sense when people start asking him things. So he goes on a defensive kind of cowering feeling, you know, so it just seems awkward whenever he speaks to the press. So I would say just let him go and leave enough alone and realize that it's not going to change. I remember Roger Maris was famously portrayed as that type of person where the press would poke at him all the time just because he couldn't really say anything press-wise. Seeing Mickey Mantle going and killing it in the presser, and then he would be like, oh, you know, we just tried to get out there and do our best today, and they would just go on him all day, and it would stress him out. So I'd say he's more of that personality, just can't handle it.
He's like the greatest American Hoagie.
Yeah, totally.
Leave him alone. Sure. Well, yeah, I don't know. Totally. I've said this before on this show. I don't know why we expect athletes to be able to be articulate and charming. And some of them are. Some of them are a great interview. But people that excel in one arena often don't excel in multiples, right?
It's also journalists, too. You know, journalists want to get that great answer out of an athlete. And they probably will. I'm going to get Phil Kessel to break out of his shell. It's not going to happen. It doesn't matter who you are. He's that's the way he is.
Well, I think
they're not going to stop.
It was the assistant coach who said publicly that he came to camp overweight, which already suggests a dysfunctional environment. If my assistant coach was saying that to the media, I'd be a little pissed off.
Yep.
And so one of the reporters asked Kessel in a scrum yesterday, do you hate your assistant coach? And he just kind of chuckled and said, no.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what the answer to that question might be.
Well, yeah. But was it the assistant for the Marlies or...
Oh, is he? On. He's the Marlies?
Was it assistant coach clinic was going on, and he said something about their relationship being sour. This is like 15th person, because I've just caught wind of what happened with what somebody said about their relationship, but it's still all the same stuff, where it's like Lai Wiki a couple weeks ago was talking about... when they were talking about the analytics stuff, that some players have the numbers are off the charts, yet their character is terrible.
Right.
And, you know, nobody knows who he's talking about, but then people just start guessing and making, they think, is it FNUF? And I think a similar thing starts when you hear certain people talking about players' relationships that might or might not necessarily be that close to things and are just kind of talking just because they know him as that type of player. Who knows?
Well, I mean, ultimately, he is either good at the hockey or he's not good at the hockey. And assuming he comes out of the gate really strong, this stuff will all be forgotten. But it's just interesting in a really crowded media climate in Toronto, and we'll talk about Rob Ford in a few minutes, how much attention this 15 pounds got.
Unbelievable.
But on the subject of sports, Let's talk about the NFL, because I know you have strong feelings about it. Is the fact that the floodgates have opened and there have been now several incidents come to light in the last couple of weeks, is that because the first one was kind of pulling a thread on a sweater, and that's why the timing for this? I guess my question is, why now?
I think it's why now, because that thread is not just TMZ, but Deadspin and all these journalists and outlets for media figuring out, you know what? The NFL is an untapped market. It's huge. The issues surrounding these things, like that domestic violence, the culture of you know, anybody, you know, beating kids and all of this kind of stuff with the athletes. The numbers are so high for stuff happening. But the journalists in sport don't report on this stuff because they know that it's their job.
It's
if
ugly.
They do talk about this kind of stuff. So what's happening now is you're getting all these other reporters who could care less, like Harvey Levin from TMZ saying, "Who could care? I don't care about what a player says about me and,
right.
and the NFL or whatever. So I'm going to put all my underlings and find this information myself and put it out there myself." And that's what's happening. You're starting to see different sources getting information and putting it out there because there's no scrutiny upstairs. It's not the press. It's not people that are associated necessarily with the sports press. It's entertainment press, and you know how they can be when it comes to getting stuff. They don't care. There's nothing to do with jobs. It's all about just getting a story and a headline.
Remember when the Rihanna Chris Brown thing happened? She had a really golden opportunity to turn an awful situation into a meaningful, positive, powerful message. And sometimes these issues are bigger, I think, than the people involved. The yeah. legions of young girls that follow Rihanna, had Rihanna said, "I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to break up with that guy and I'm going to stand up and say, this is not okay." That would have done so much good in the world. And in a way, I feel like the NFL has this golden opportunity with starting with Michael Sam. Because my feeling is, all things being equal, if it comes down to Michael Sam and another guy, the amount of good that can come from signing him, even if he's not the best player in the world.
Yep.
But the amount of good that can come from signing him, even if your plan is to trade him in 2 months, versus A, the amount of negative press you'll get by not signing him, let alone B, the terrible message it sends by not signing him. It's the same as the punishments that Adrian Peterson and Ray Rice should have automatically gotten. And it just seems like at every turn, the NFL has botched the actual legit opportunity to do the right thing.
Well, again, we have the old boys club of the NFL owners who you can tell that's their idea is to, who cares, shut up. We don't need to even deal with this. That was the initial response. That was why Ray Rice got 2 games. That was the typical old school NFL response of like, whatever.
Well, it's only the court of public opinion that changed that. If people hadn't said otherwise, that would have stuck, right?
But that's what I'm saying. You have these kind of old school guys sitting in a room and they could care less about that stuff. And it's the social media, the awareness of people, women online, nationally, not just, well, in America, also in Canada, the rest of the world, that are online going against, telling the NFL that this isn't right. You can't just like do this stuff and then expect corporate sponsors to stay with you and expect to keep your commissioner and all of these things. So the fact that they're pushing and pushing, you're getting harder suspensions. The players are the lowest person on the chain, so they're going to feel it the most. But eventually, they're going to either have to get rid of Goodell, or I'm hoping some of these corporate sponsors will start to realize that they need to do things, and they're starting to make statements to say that they're not cool with what they're saying and the way things are being dealt with, I guess, as a threat. But they still haven't. I know Anheuser-Busch issued a statement last week, but they didn't really pull out. They just said, well, we're not really cool with what's happening right here. So
I know, which is, by the way, the minimum
yeah.
you can socially get away with doing.
Yeah.
Like, what would happen if Goodell should have to step down just as a matter of course. But what would happen if Peyton Manning said, you know what? I'm not playing in Sunday's game. And some of the heavy duty guys boycotted the league until they cleaned up some of the stuff. That would be heavy. Well,
they know how old school it is. You know, that's the thing. I mean, it's domestic violence, as bad as it is. I don't think you'll see players stand up to it like they did with Donald Sterling and a race issue.
Right.
You know, you had players eventually saying, like, we're not going to play for this guy. But for some reason, and I think that's sad because it should be a similar response that players are not getting together and saying this isn't cool. Like, we need to make a statement as well. But you can tell how old school and how hard that board is of owners that they know who they're playing with, and that would that's why you're getting this kind of reaction.
There are very few taboos left in our society, and as a celebrity or a professional athlete, you can recover from just about anyone. Child abuse and domestic violence, you should just be done. You're just automatically done. There should be zero.
I know.
Zero
tolerance. How about just the fact that it's there's people like Charles Barkley disputing it and saying, no, this is just the way it is. This is how we do it in the South. Like, we beat our kids. And,
well,
and
that is just so dumb. And Reggie
ridiculous.
Bush came out in support of Adrian too. Like, why would you even throw yourself in those choppy waters if you weren't in it? Like, even if Adrian was my friend and he reached out and said, man, I could use your support, I'd be like, man, you did this to yourself. I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah, well,
aside from the fact that you don't agree with what he did, of course.
Yeah, the fact that they're saying, well, just because it happened to me makes it okay, is just ridiculous. I mean, that means, like, they also had slavery. Does that make it okay? You
right.
know, I mean, if you go back far enough, we did some drastic and terrible things as human beings. Like, it doesn't make it all right just because it's happening. So I think the uncovering of this, the fact that it's TMZ or whatever happens to be kind of the catalyst that are bringing these to the front. And again, it's just mostly to do with because you don't have these sports journalists worried about their positions.
Harvey Levin must sleep with one eye open.
The outside media getting in, the floodgates are just busting through, and they're somehow looking like it's some great thing, it's some wonderful thing that they're doing, and yet all they're doing is just kind of doing what people don't want to do that or can't be allowed to do in the sports media, yet it's causing all this stuff.
It's so gross. And of course, you can't help but wonder and assume that this is just the tip of the iceberg, and we'd probably be gobsmacked to know to the degree that all this stuff happens in the NFL. I don't know. Do you think football is a sport that's more prone to it? Is that a generalization?
Well, like I said, it's just because it's not, it's, you have 40 players on the team as opposed to, like, you know, less in other sports, but it's the, I think it's just the way the sport is, the hardness, the way they kind of make the players feel almost like it's more military based than any other sport. So I don't know. I don't know why the domestic violence. I mean, I've heard numbers of like 22 to 23 teams out of the league have players that have domestic violence.
Wow.
Issues going. So athletes, entitled athletes, growing up with that mind, I don't know. I'd like to think it's across the board and not just in the NFL, but like it's terrible and it needs to be uncovered for sure. But
isn't it also like 40% of NFL athletes within the first year of retirement go bankrupt? It's some jaw-dropping statistic like that.
The lifespan is very short, and yet the preparation that goes into that 3 or 4 years is your whole life thrown into it, and when you're done, you have nothing to back up or fall back on. There's no way to do it. I think there's big issues with the pensions and the way that they take care of the players after they do retire. That's it's a scary stuff, and hopefully the actual play of the game becomes, you know, a little bit more of the headlines in the sport as opposed to the issues going on wrong with the sport, because that seems to be what's happening more. And my concern is the performance of all sports seems to be kind of dwindling, and it's like not about that as much anymore in terms of media, and that gives me the creeps.
Well, Goodell should be dust, and it'll be interesting to see in the coming weeks if the actual sport and television viewership dwindles a little bit in the wake of all this stuff. How long were you the place kicker on the Ticats again? Was it 3 years?
Yeah, 2.5 years, but my knee still isn't the same.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Laces
Let's take
out.
A break.
We'll take a break on TNT. Be right back to talk about Rob Ford. Stay with us.
Would you like some egg and beans? Fuck off!
And we're back. Hey, Jonathan.
Welcome back to Taggart and Torrance. I'm Jonathan Torrance.
And I'm Jeremy Taggart.
We have that part down pat, bud.
We sure do.
It's Taggart and Torrance in the morning. Let's talk about Rob Ford.
Let's talk about Rob Ford, who has fallen ill.
Obviously, by the time the folks hear this, much will have been discussed about Rob Ford. But since we've kind of from the get-go at least been tracking this bizarre story, we feel like we should talk about it to some degree. I guess my question is this. I wouldn't wish cancer on anyone. It seems like there's a bit of revisionist history going on, and people are kind of giving him a hall pass because of his illness now for some of the sins he committed beforehand. Like, it feels like there's this retroactive affection for Rob Ford that wasn't there 3 weeks ago. Do you see that?
Well, I think what we're seeing is the first time in for everybody is we're getting sympathy. You know, I mean, you can't not feel bad for the guy. It's a terrible situation to have that. It's apparently a 50-50 type cancer of survival rate.
Really?
It's a difficult cancer. Apparently he's with a great doctor. He's got a good chance of survival just because of the team that he has working with him. But, he's got a big fight on his hands. And, I think nobody can feel anything but terrible about that. And
of course,
knowing that the guy is definitely a fighter. He's very, we know how hardcore he is about his people of Etobicoke when he was a counselor there, and how hard he's worked in terms of answering the phones. And I do believe that he does have a relationship with a lot of people, and he feels that that's existing. Yet there is a side of this that's just as bizarre as everything else. The fact that he did make the statement from his bed before he went into chemotherapy and surgery. He was basically kind of making it a pitch for his brother, you know, as opposed to like, I'm going to be okay. Everything's fine. And it turned out to be like, you know, everybody should vote for Doug and he's a great guy and, you know, think what you think, but he's the man for the job. And it's just there's the time and place for that kind of talk. And that's just, in my mind, it doesn't make sense that it's happening there, but this is Rob Ford and he does things in this sense where it's like, wow, you know, here we go. Somehow he's in the hospital and it's almost like a cartel leader or something, you know, talking to his people, you know, like it's all, you know, you don't worry. He's a bit of a crazy guy, but just vote for him. Do the job, folks. You know, it's kind
well,
of
it seemed like
in that regard.
I saw someone in the media say suddenly it's like we're in royal baby watch. Like there are throngs of reporters outside the hospital and we're waiting for breaking news by the second. The story did take a totally different turn, but not even in the way you'd expect. I thought the other candidates in the mayoral race handled it about as well as you could, which is to say, terrible news, wouldn't wish it on anybody, wish him the very best. He's a committed politician, but onto the business at hand. I don't know what else you could do.
Well, yeah, and then you go into the next day and they'll talk about a debate next week, and they'll be asking them about Rob Ford, which is insanity. The fact that this is a mayoral race, and they're still talking about a guy who just dropped out and he's in the hospital, and yet, believe me, this will be topic number one when the scrum happens with all these, with Tory and Chow and obviously Doug, and they'll be playing it all different ways. And
he's not an old man. Is he 45?
Yeah, he's not old at all. I mean, we know he wasn't the healthiest guy, and he probably wasn't the most nutritionally conscious person, and we know the kind of things that he put in his body, but I do believe this is a cancer that isn't necessarily a lifestyle type of cancer that can be brought on from that.
But it's not.
No, it's like apparently a genetic cancer.
Yeah. I'm sure when he had some pain in his stomach, I'm sure he thought it was a stress ulcer. Like,
absolutely.
Like him or hate him, what the guy's been through in the last year is unbelievable.
I can't believe it. And you have every single thing you could want in terms of press for this to be dramatic and as glamorous as it always is. With you actually have people out there who think this is a big show, a conspiracy. It's like he's not sick.
It's fake? No. Really?
There are people out. Yes. This Toronto thing has gotten out of control where they were saying it a lot. You heard a lot about it initially. The fact that the timing of the issue. I mean, even I was a little bit skeptical when all of a sudden I heard he fell ill in the middle of the Mike Tyson going crazy on TV thing. You know, it was kind of, in terms of the timing of it, was weird, but you know, once you hear a doctor talking about his condition, you know, that's the end of that. So
it says a lot
still
about
people going on. Yeah.
It says a lot about what point we're at in our history that people are so skeptical that they assume it's a bit.
Well,
like
knows?
He's doing a bit.
Well, the rehab thing was arguably bizarre.
Yeah.
He was up in Muskoka, and there were people that said that were in rehab with him that he disrupted it. And
it's like a Sandra Bullock movie.
Yeah, for sure. Totally. About Schmidt.
Yeah.
Apparently it was, that to me, that was weird. You know, the woman that showed up and was caught drunk in his Escalade and gotten pounded and all that weird stuff that happened while he was in rehab. And then he's out of rehab and fine. But yet, you just don't know really what was going on. And now he's in the hospital with cancer. It's just so crazy.
So crazy. I think, obviously Rob Ford's an extreme example, but I think we are too weight conscious as a society to begin with. I always thought that women put an enormous amount of pressure on other women to be skinny because my theory is that men like things we don't have, like hips and busts and all those things. But I'm noticing that dudes are so weight conscious lately, and dudes are super, super skinny and wearing super, super skinny jeans like the kids nowadays. There's such a movement to be thin, and this thigh gap stuff, I don't even get it.
It's a tough look to get to, Jonathan?
Well, you're right. I've never had that problem.
The thigh gap is tough. I don't know if I can get to the thigh gap.
What is the attraction of the thigh gap, though?
I thought like it was turning the other way, where women are finding men with bellies attractive.
That's what I'm waiting for.
Have you heard? You haven't heard this theory? This is a new one I heard.
I heard a theory by a guy with a belly about a year and a half ago.
No, this is a possibly look it up, but it's more of like women are finding that Randy look. They're getting Randy over Randy. They like the barrels.
As it should be.
Some women like the barrels, and when you don't have the barrel, they don't look at you.
Yeah.
It's like a King Henry VIII thing.
They want to be able to stare right down the barrel.
I don't know. Yeah, they like the big poncho.
Well, I maintain no one ever laughed at a six-pack. That's just true.
Yeah.
And anybody that I see who's completely jacked, it takes so much time and so much self-involvement to go to the gym that many hours a day and eat just right and not eat whatever. Life's too short not to snack. And we have young families. I'd rather party with my kids than be at Gold's popping squats.
4 hours a day so you can like see veins on your veins?
Not for me.
that SpongeBob neck look where you're just like, like when I popped into the room and the guys were doing crack.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Crack weightlifting.
Crack doing weights. Pushing weights with crack.
Have you ever been a weightlifting guy?
No, I've been to a gym. I, you know, worked out a little bit. I try to work out here at the house. Lisa works out a lot, but not weights or anything. But I've never been that guy. I know that guy. And, you know, like the kind of guy where you walk up to him at breakfast and you go, hey, get your legs off the table. And there his arms.
Right. He's that guy.
Yeah, for sure.
The gym culture, I mind maybe more than the actual gym itself. Like the walking around with a towel, the sitting naked on a leather chair watching CNN, the shaving, like, ugh.
Well, yeah, that's up there with like the, you know, settling down at Starbucks for 5 hours with your laptop.
That's not for me either.
Yeah, that's the same type of person. That's what they do.
There isn't anything I want to do for 5 hours.
Well, I don't know if I could hang out and put, like, same people that have, like, they live downtown and they live in the condo with the huge glass walls and they don't put drapes up and they're just, like, standing there and you don't, like, they don't care what people are looking at them, right, or whatever. And I've seen, like, being downtown and, like, you they're everywhere now. Like, you park your car and you see three, you know, five buildings with like condos and you can see right into them. And you always have like the classic, you know, parties going on. And I remember one night actually was after I was with, Dan O'Toole, we went to the Hyatt and I was like going up to my car and I'm like looking up as I'm about to back up out of the like fourth floor of the parking or garage that I was in. And I see like the classic, like two guys and two women. And like the guy has like the, you know, the pants off and he's got his arms up in the air dancing and snapping his fingers. And he's got a huge barrel and the dress shirt, like the total, like the big rich business guy wheeling.
No.
Guy. Yes. Yes.
Were they on the clock? The ladies?
Yeah, guaranteed, because the guys were like kind of like the standing there hanging out and the girls went into the bathroom together and I'm like, this is insane. And this was like, I you know, I just like, I was like fixated for like 5 minutes just to see like what the hell was going to happen. And then all of a sudden they're all like, woo. And the guy puts the girl up on the bar and he's like, he bends down and I'm like, this is insanity. And like other guys like right there and they're like, I think they were like doing drugs because I kept bending over on the table. I'm like, this is full on like ridiculous.
It was a two for Tuesday.
They don't have any drapes or nothing.
Was it in the Hyatt? Because I used to live at...
No, it wasn't in the Hyatt. It was like the like people that live in like Yorkville.
Right.
Like those condos in Yorkville.
Right, because at the Hyatt on King, I used to live in that neighborhood like a block away within viewing distance, and you'd sometimes see adult films being shot in the Hyatt on King.
Classic.
Like, why does that one room have so many more lights than the... Oh,
yeah, I see. No, this was like, you know, Kevin O'Leary's neighbor.
Right.
Like, just, you know, having a night.
Kev, you gotta get over here, bruh. I need backup.
Yeah, come on, let's go.
Shark Tank week over here.
The snapping the fingers and like the, you know, the big barrel and the you
know. What's with snapping the fingers? They were listening to Pitbull on their iPods.
I don't know what, listening to what?
Pitbull.
Pitbull for sure. Yeah. Totally.
You're listening to Kesha?
The Timber. Listening to that song for sure. Twisting around like in rodeo styles. He kind of looked like the Modern Family guy, you know, the guy, the big guy from Modern Family.
Yeah.
Like that kind of guy. Probably some like multi-millionaire greaseball, like has his condo and his family's up in the house.
Yeah.
You know, and up in Mississauga and he's out wheeling for the night.
Where's daddy? Oh, he had to work late. with Uncle Kevin.
When Timber just crank.
He's wearing the shirt with the paisley collar that his aunt got him for Christmas.
The 5,000 thread count shirt.
It's been scotch guarded. So greasy.
He's putting on like this like huge cologne on the ride home in his car.
Or like stops to get gas and gets gas on his hands on purpose and wipes it on his shirt. And makes up some story about how he tripped at the Irving on Spadina.
He pours gas on himself. Like, oh!
Just to throw Mrs. McPherson off the scent.
he's up at 5:30 to be at the...
T-ball practice.
No, it's a 4:30 game of squash with my buddy on Bay Street.
Ugh. That's not for me.
Oh, it's just too much.
You know, it's as important to know what you're not into as it is to know what you're into. That, like, the Bay Street, that's not for me. Camping is not for me. People say about camping that, like, look, it's almost as good as home. Like, the bed's pretty comfy. It's almost as good as home. Or this steak tastes almost as good as it would at home. Then just stay home.
Yeah, exactly, right? If you can cook it, stay home.
Yeah, camping, Bay Street, and Vancouver. Three things I'm not into. We'll take a break on TNT and be right back with a game called K90s. Stay tuned.
Fucking right, eh?
Hey, Jonathan.
I read a thing about the harmonica player who played that lick in Timber. It's going down, I'm calling Timber. And for the first time in his teenage daughter's eyes, he was cool. Because he's like 60-year-old harmonica cat, and he played that lick on Timber. And that's what it took to make him cool in his kid's eyes. Wouldn't he be crushed?
Yeah, I wonder how much money he got for it. A quick little sesh.
That's the thing. He probably got like $180 and some dental benefits through the union, right?
Probably triple scale, 300.
Is scale $100?
Triple scale, $300 probably, and then no dental.
But maybe he got a cab chit and a Subway sandwich?
Exactly. Maybe some water and towels.
Man. It's a hard old road. Speaking of the hard old road... Speaking of, what was the Dave Bedini book called? Was it On a Cold Road?
I thought the Dave Keon one?
No, the Dave Bedini book about Canadian road stories.
I know. Didn't he write a book about Dave Keon?
Did he?
Too? I don't know. Now we're going off topic here.
Bedini's a friend of the show and someone who'll come on as a guest at some point.
But tell us all about it.
On a Cold Road was the book he wrote about road stories from Canada. Some of them in the 90s. Last week we played Canadies, which was Name That Tune, Canadian 80s songs. It was such a hit that this week we're going to play K90s.
Yes.
And there was some chirpery on the Twitter machine about not drilling down deep enough from Toronto Mike, who has a great podcast. We both guested on his show.
Yes.
He was saying we had to go harder. And I buy that argument to a degree, but I also think part of the fun play along at home is... You want to be able to go, I know this one. And if you go too obscure, I don't think it's as fun to listen to. That's my hunch.
Yes, and I also didn't even fare that well. I know I got I got a couple wrong.
So yeah, don't be sad. Just, one out of three ain't bad.
I blew it on
Who's going first, Haywire. Bud?
I don't mind going first.
By the way, I blew it on Haywire is a great t-shirt slogan.
Oh, for sure. Okay, right. I'm gonna start with this. This is a K90s, the song
Gem. Okay,
you ready for this?
Yeah, hit me.
Nice little beginning here. Maybe a little light here. Tarzan
wasn't. Holy cow! Superman song, Crash Test Dummies.
Nice.
Do you want to hear something crazy?
What?
I'm going to play my first one. Here it comes.
Huh? That's what you picked?
Same one.
Wow. So maybe we should just break it down, the video here.
I think, here's the thing.
There's no lower voice in Canadian music. This is a little weird. You should turn yours off. Let's just stick with mine, because now we're getting double Brad.
Okay, but I turned mine off. Keep yours going.
Yeah,
I think Brad Roberts never really got his due as a songwriter. I think he's a great songwriter.
I think Ellen, who sings harmony
in this band, has an incredible voice. And I think they've been cast into one-hit wonder territory.
They were big, though, man. Like, think about it. Back then?
Was big in the States?
Yes.
Was
huge.
It?
Huge. Well, put it this way. The YouTube's got 8.5 million views.
Wow.
Soup had a strange job.
And then that Five for Fighting did their own Superman song, but it wasn't as good.
OLP did their own version of Superman.
You what?
OLP had a little Superman song there.
I've heard of them.
Yeah. Superman's Dead Part 2. And then there was the next level of Kryptonite by Three Doors Down.
Yeah.
For the fourth of Superman references in the 90s.
Where do you stand on the Crash Test Dummies? One-hit wonder or great band?
I thought that they had a really great run. Not just that, they had the... remember they were all over the Farrelly Brothers flick back then?
Peter Pumpkinhead.
Yeah, they had a really... a big run there. I remember that Brad was living large. I remember he had some pad in south of France or something. He was rolling.
Was he?
Yeah. So,
Did you ever cross paths with them?
I think we saw them at award shows and stuff, but never. I don't remember chatting too much.
Right.
Yeah, but I always had respect for that band. They were, but I do believe that they got theirs, because they were pretty popular.
So does Ellen have a big fat bank account? If you were a member of Crash Tests and you had a number one song.
I believe Brad wrote the tunes, didn't he?
Yeah. So she'd get Brad,
hence the pad in south of France. Because I think they were from the Peg originally.
Yeah, they were. Who has the pad in the south of France?
The singer, Brad.
Does he?
Yeah, it was either that or Italy or some ridiculous. Yeah,
he lived in Halifax for a while, because I think he married a lady from here.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I thought he was rolling for a minute there, a couple pads.
He probably was. He likes to pound some Frosty Soldiers.
Okay, let's go to your first K90s pick.
Well, my first K90s pick was Superman song.
Yeah, so we can go to your second.
I'm going to go to my second one. Now, there's a bit of regional pride at work here. So that's a little hint.
Okay.
She, one of Canada's premier songstresses. Here it comes. Ready?
Sure.
Right?
Don't kill your dogs. Is that... this is Sarah?
Who?
Sarah McLachlan?
No.
Oh, sorry.
I'm going to cut it before the vocal comes in.
That's why I was talking about the poor dogs.
Any guesses?
No.
She was on Trailer Park Boys.
Keep playing it. Rita McNeil?
Yeah.
That's a sneaky 90s pick, man.
It's kind of sneaky because the songs that she sings are timeless classics.
I thought you were hitting me with some Sarah McLachlan because she's from The Rock.
No, but I'm going to tell you something. Rita had a wonderful sense of humor and was on Trailer Park Boys harvesting dope, as you might remember.
Yes.
And, she kind of got a bit of a bad rap for being folksy and whatever, but she had a great sense of humor and a great voice. And she was one of our treasures out here for sure.
She was an amazing person. I remember she was one of those people who had heavy feeling for Canadianity and local roots, and always gave back in massive ways to her community and for all the people she never bailed on anybody.
No, she never bailed on anybody. Yeah.
You gotta love Rita.
You gotta. You guys must have played Rita and Friends on CBC.
Never did.
Why?
Hey, man. I wish we had, but we never did. I don't know. I don't know why. I don't know.
I guarantee it wasn't for lack of invitation. You would have been welcome on Rita's show.
I would have done fucking Tommy Hunter.
And been on his show. All right, what's your next pick?
I would have taken that dusty old cock for a run there.
Wow.
Okay, now let's go to my pick here.
Quick Tommy Hunter story. My friend Lynn used to produce the show, and he liked to put on his trousers last because he didn't want to have them wrinkled like a proper country gentleman.
Genius. So
he'd have his hat, the jacket, the rhinestone, everything, the boots, pants sitting on a hanger, ready to go.
Hang on there. Hang on. I ain't ready yet.
Tommy, we're ready for you. Let me put my trousers on real quick.
Was it the tighties or the boxers?
That I don't know. I'm going to say white Y-fronts. It was a different time.
Yeah. Yes.
They are okay, probably ready for my Stanfields. All right, hit go.
Are you ready for my pick?
Yeah.
Intense video here.
I can't hear it, bud.
It's very harsh recording.
Is that Tea Party?
Yes.
I had Sister Awake as my next pick.
Oh no.
I had Sister Awake as my next pick.
Oh no.
All I had to hear was one.
Yeah. A little bit of Tea Party right there. He's in the water. Not unlike the Trent Reznor video.
Sure.
Water.
Like, I always picture that dude with, like, a vest made out of crow feathers and candles.
What's that?
I always pictured him in, like, a vest made of crow feathers and big candles.
Tell you. SCTV. Right?
Yeah.
Kids in the Hall, second. Jeff Martin, third. Comedy. Canadian history.
I'm going to say I agree
Did
with
you
your
get
first
that?
Two. I agree with your
I
first
said
two.
SCTV.
Yeah.
Kids in the Hall.
Jeff Martin.
Jeff Martin. Comedy. Canadian history. Top three.
I'll see your first two and I agree, but my third is Burton Cummings.
Oh, yes. Burton is brilliant.
Have you ever seen like excerpts from the Burton Cummings show when he's doing Gordon Lightfoot and he's like, he's doing bits?
Yes. No, I've seen that. I think he like had his own show or something.
Yeah,
right?
He did. 'Cause
there's a lot of content on YouTube of him doing ridiculous stuff. Like there's one of him like doing a workout video. Have you seen that?
No.
And he's like doing all these different workout things that are like based on what, people in history like Janis Joplin and then
no
yeah it's a, it, I should I wish I could find it.
That's I'd worth a that. Google
maybe if on our next break I'll look to wrap things up I'll have a look for it but
little Burton
it
All
is
right.
brilliant
here comes mine and you have to listen to the slow vamp at the start because once it kicks in you'll know for sure.
Okay,
here it comes.
What the hell? That's us, the old OLP right there.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Now, why is this song of particular interest to you and me?
How many times have you been pushed around?
You and me?
Yeah.
Well, for me, because I was in the band at the time. You, because...
Can you remember?
You liked it? Oh, what? Were you there at some point?
No, I sampled Life... As J-Rock.
Oh, I forgot, yes.
For the first Trailer Park Boys movie.
Why don't you play that version?
And I think Rain thought I was making fun, but I wasn't, because one of the lyrics was, Rain made a pool in the backyard.
I love that line. That was the best part of the whole thing. Rain made a... Was it sitting by the pool or chilling by
pool
the pool?
Pool in the backyard, yeah.
See, now you got to cue it up.
I'm going to hit it. Oh, that's the I have to find the album version.
Yeah, you got to queue up the version. Let me cuz that to me was, I remember the whole thing about that coming out and like
can't use the sample.
Yeah, it was like a big kerfuffle and
album I was version. Always... I think this is it. And I sped up Rain's voice, so it sounds a little high. Maybe that's what he didn't like.
Times if you sat out on the deck, getting wrecked, and waiting to collect a check. No one that's as good as life is ever gonna get. No one, when you're from the park, it's in your blood, it's in your sweat. Debts and doubts and bets and doubts of insanity. Is it society or is it just vanity that makes me plan to be the man that I plan to be? Instead, I can't see the forest. Where's the money for the trees? It's a social disease, and all the other MCs are on my back like fleas. Please, J's the ROC is so hard.
OLP ain't even getting royalties from me.
Love it.
And here comes the chorus. Here comes Rain Maida. And I think Rain thought I was making fun, so we weren't allowed to use the sample for a time, and then we were ultimately able to when we released the album. Funny, eh? How when, like, lawyers and folks get involved, whereas if he and I could have had a chat and I would have been like, man, I'm not making fun of anybody. It's just, it's a clever lyric. We probably could have smoothed it out.
Singers always think you're making fun of them when they hear their name.
Do they?
I think that's like, yeah, no matter what you say, it's like, well, it's like on paper, it's different.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, what does that mean? Chilling by the pool. Does that mean all I do is chill by the pool?
Right. Rain made a pool in the backyard. Yeah, right. Well, if you know me for 5 seconds, you know that I like hybrid words and wordplay. That's all.
Oh, absolutely.
Hey, okay, do you have another one for me?
Of course. Of course. So here we go. Are you ready right now for this one?
Yeah, hit me.
Okay, here we go. This is a live version with a quality little lead up here.
Okay, hit me.
By the time leader. Until history played its fateful course. They kicked out all the non-Catholics, and this guy had to find weekend tribal work in North Montreal. Put your hands together for the King of Spain!
Ah, Gian Gameschi.
Oh, yes.
Now I eat humble pie. Oh, my
unspeakable. He's got some hair going on this. This is the... Early 90s here, right?
Moxie Fruvis.
Cue the barbershop, babes.
Do but it, do it, do it, do but it, do it, do it, do it, do it, do it. Here's the thing. If I'm being honest, I often get Moxie Fruvis and Rockapella mixed up because they were the house band on Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego. And there weren't that many a cappella bands at the time. Moxie Fruvis seems like something that could only have happened in that time. And I remember at the time they were kind of political. They're musically sound, there's no question. But I don't know if that would sustain now. Is that fair?
The conga player was kind of the leader. I remember seeing them a couple of times. I was surprised that Gian kind of came out as the guy that would be the broadcasting person.
Right.
Out of the group, but because I remember seeing them live a few times, and that guy, the conga guy, was kind of like the guy who kept it all together and had the quips and the one-liners, and then they would all just do their thing after the fact. But it was definitely more of a comedy kind of vibe than rock and roll concert,
right?
In my mind,
rock and roll comedy. Okay, I'm gonna play one more for you. And
yeah, you got another one?
This one is timely. Yeah, listen.
You have to excuse me, I'm not in my
Oh, nice.
I've been gone for a month. I've been drunk since I left. So-called vacations will soon be
great tune.
I'm so sick from the drink. I need
Home for a Rest.
Spirit of the West.
Spirit of the West, of nice. Yeah. Singer is John Mann.
I was letting her ride because it's a great jam.
The reason it's timely is because John Mann was just, well, I don't know if he was just diagnosed, but it was just released, the information that he has Alzheimer's.
Yes.
So they've been tangling with that as a band for the last year and trying to figure out how to roll out that information. And there was a big article in the Globe, and I thought he was enormously courageous to come out with information like that because it could affect his livelihood and therefore the rest of the band's.
Yeah.
Undoubtedly, Canadian legends, and that was sad news as far as Canadian goes in the past couple weeks.
I remember hearing the news, and again, like I agree with you, it was super heartfelt and sad to hear about that, especially being a singer and, you know, being physical and the deterioration.
Unreal front man. And one of the wittiest onstage banterers, which can, as you know, so easily sound contrived and forced. He's naturally funny, band, confident, swagger, great players.
One of the best drummers too. I've ever seen.
Again, with the drummers.
Yes.
Let's take a break. We'll be right back to wrap it up on TNT.
Yes.
Wake up, all you rockers, and roll out of bed. If you gotta get up, you get down. Okay. We're gonna start off today with a few warm-up moves. Let's try the Presley sneer.
Presley sneer. It's Burton Cummings. Burton Cummings working out.
Shake your head like John Lennon.
Shake your head like John Lennon, Jonathan.
Now, like, was it funny at the time?
It's kind of funny because he has, like, two, like, guys look like from his band or crew doing it with him, and he's just making fun of Mick Jagger now with the rooster walk, and he's thrusting.
I want to know who greenlit it. He was like, you know who's a bit of a cut-up? Is that Burton Cummings? Although I should be careful, because maybe in 20 years people will be like, I don't know, I'm listening to this Taggart and Torrance, I don't get it.
I think he was like maybe thinking he had the possibility of like a comedy career going. Like, I didn't know he was like, I always thought he was pretty funny in interviews, but this is like, these are skits, these are full blown like sitting around writing it and then going to film it. He even does like, he portrays all these characters. He's crazy.
Let's try to get him on the phone.
What's that?
Let's try to get him on the phone next week.
We need to get. He's very elusive, I think, with certain interviews.
Help us get to Burton.
Yes.
If you're listening and you know how to get him, #, help us get Burton.
Help us get Burton on Taggart.
We'll talk to you next week, Tags.
Talk to you soon. Talk to you, Jonathan.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Where's my beer chair?